membership, and expanding the basic level of understanding about insects and related organisms through outreach to stakeholders of all types. So when you read that, you could almost interpret that as there's even more of an opportunity to carry this mission forward in many parts of the world that are outside of our current branch boundaries. And I think for the most part, and certainly my limited interaction with the International Affairs Committee has been that really, again, the growth area and an area where there's tremendous opportunity to fulfill our mission as we've stated it. What are some suggestive signs for an international focus? Increase in proportion of total ESA membership, I indicated that. The majority of growth potential, I think most people believe, I personally do, is outside the current branches. That's not to say there aren't more members within our current branches that could, or more individuals or entomologists that could join. And we're very hopeful the network concept will bring those out that are kind of on the fringe and find ways to and mechanisms to affiliate and bring in, you know, those who may affiliate presently with molecular biology or may affiliate with some other area of zoology or agriculture. But we do believe that the largest opportunity is for us to have a participation with folks outside those major branches. I think another suggestive sign is just how active and sustaining the leadership on the Standing Committee on International Affairs, the members have been. I say this frequently, that committee is one of two that year in and year out, two or three, they all do their jobs, but that committee, with along with one or two others, are the ones that really do an exceptional job. And to me, that is an indicator that there's a demand, that there's some interest, there's some dialogue, there are some relevant topics that go on year in and year out. It's not a flash in the pan. So that, to me, is a suggestive sign. The proportion of attendees and participants at the ESA annual meeting. Now, regretfully, I don't have that specific data right now in terms of the breakdown, but I can tell you just anecdotally, from year to year, I have seen more and more and more participation from folks outside of our 5-6 branch meetings, whether they're members or not. This meeting draws a lot of folks. We have well over 2,700 participants at this meeting, and I would venture to guess that a large proportion of those folks are outside outside of those branch boundaries that we have today. And I do personally believe it's the fastest growing. So that's a suggestive sign. And also the expanding reach and authorship of ESA journals. It's a very fast growing rate. And it's a key focus, really one of the key focus elements of our five-element publication strategy, which the Governing Board has recently passed, and that is to have greater international participation, greater international reach with our journals. So that certainly lines up very nice. I think Steve Clement's got some very intriguing data to suggest some of that's already happening. Cyber-connected world through technology. I mean, folks, just 5 years ago, we were using 2x2 slides. So, and now we're all networked together and all kinds of cool wizardry going on. And it's going to only get better and faster and quicker. I know that we've already got a few experiments, if you will, in terms of connecting overseas through video conferencing. The Governing Board actually had a couple meetings this year with kind of a live meeting network where we didn't have to physically get together. The technology is moving at an incredibly fast rate, and it's enabling things that we would not have thought possible. So I don't know what it will look like and how we'll utilize it, but I do know it will change and there will be options to connect the world together. So that is a suggestive sign as well. What are some of the benefits of a branch? And everything has benefits and not so much benefits, but the benefits of a branch, I believe, one is that it is an ESA governance unit. It's clearly part of the bylaws. It's one of the governing units of the ESA, and therefore a governing board representative would participate. A representative on ESA committees, for sure, not just international affairs, but all the committees, awards, etc., and the governance structure themselves as a branch. The staffing services, such as membership services and financial services, would be availed to the branches just as they are currently, or to an international branch. The infrastructure for self-determination initiatives, meetings, membership drives would be a part similar to a branch. And instant membership, because they're already 478 or whatever that was earlier, that are looking for a place to have their net. So it would be instant automatic membership as opposed to going out and having membership drives. Benefits of a network, if that's an option, is, again, freedom to operate. You're not governed, so you're not encumbered by that. No governance or regulation, initiation of your own committees as desired. And branches can, by the way, do that too. And you can arrange for dues as you want on that, whereas branches are not allowed to solicit dues as part of the ESA Central. However, you can collect fees as part of a meeting. I won't go through the details. These are publicly available on the web in terms of the bylaws, but it's very clearly spelled out on how to modify the boundaries of a branch and how to create a new branch within our new bylaws. And we had a very good discussion on that within that. And basically it just makes modifying Section 4 and Section 1 within the branch portion of the bylaws. Suggest enablement of multiple branch membership. This is one point I would make, is that I strongly suggest if we go this way that we enable flexibility so that members can join more than one branch. So if you live in California, you're part of the Pacific branch, but you can also be part of the international branch. And that gives flexibility. You would have a little bit additional fee. Officers, they only require president, treasurer, and governing board representatives. The annual meeting would be your option. Some meetings are optional. You don't have to have a branch meeting. You could tie it to the ICE every fourth year. You could tie it to the annual ESA meeting. The other 3 years, ESA will provide program enhancement funds to branches, just as we do the other branches. The suggestion of an international area is to find a way to unite this, and this is not in a structural way, but more in some ways a spiritual way, to bring the entomology community together in somewhat of a multi-national approach, a United Nations of sorts. The synergies could be in a number of ways if you choose to use them from an overall services standpoint. It could be in terms of just the diversity and inclusion. The individual identity is not at risk here. There's no intent for any takeover. It's really an association. And certainly the professional and personal enrichment that we all get when we work with other cultures and other groups. So my recommendation is to focus on the purpose first. Function should always precede form. Don't get too worried about the organization so much as what you're going to do with it. Think big about the possibilities. Renewal, in every sense, is always an evergreen topic. It's not a one-time thing. Get in front of the trends and be a trendsetter, whether it's through the technology uses or through other areas. And as with this renewal, don't fear change. Put ESA in a global leadership role to have that kind of influence. So thank you for the opportunity to share my thoughts.
Some estimated 25 million ash trees have been killed primarily in southeast Michigan, and in 2002 the causal agent was determined to be the emerald ash borer, Agrylis planipennis, exotic beetle native to East Asia. And it behaves generally like a typical buprestid, feeding under the bark on the xylem-phloem interface, girdling the trees, disrupting the flow of nutrients and water. And all the major ash species in North America that it's encountered so far have proven to be susceptible to one degree or another. It kills trees fairly rapidly, at least after symptoms become visible, and it colonizes trees of every size that's physically big enough to house a buprestid, basically from 1 inch up. As I said, it behaves like a typical buprestid, except for one key thing, and that is that it's attacking and killing healthy trees as well as stress trees. So it's created a wood borer outbreak, a buprestid outbreak of unprecedented intensity in southeast Michigan. And here's an example. This isn't a bark beetle damage. There's no evidence of any kind of aggregation pheromone. This kind of mass attack is a result of individual oviposition decisions by individual females. And so they're overwhelming and killing the trees quite quickly. This map shows the known distribution of emerald ash borer, at least as we know it today, and the main infestation is concentrated here in southeast Michigan and Windsor. As I said, it's a lot redder than this. They're not filling in the map there anymore. That wave of mortality is spreading. The wave of tree mortality is spreading out about 15 miles a year, more or less, in all directions. And then you see isolated outlier infestations in Illinois, Indiana, throughout Ohio, West Virginia, and Maryland as a result of artificial movement by human activity. I want to talk a little bit about research that our group has been doing and our collaborators on a couple things. One is that we're looking at patterns of ash mortality in the forests of southeast Michigan and ecological impacts of subsequent gap formation. And we're also looking at chemical ecology of the host-insect interaction from a coevolutionary standpoint, with the idea of trying to inform a breeding program for resistance. This is the distribution of the major ash species in eastern North America, so you can see that we're dealing with a continental spread as the insect continues to move through North America. I just want to back up for a second, if I can. Yep. And draw your attention to a poster that Nate Siegert is going to present tomorrow, I believe, Tuesday, where he's done some really fascinating dendrochronology work in Dub McCullough's lab and with their colleagues to reconstruct the history of establishment and spread of emerald ash borer in southeast Michigan. And it's providing some really interesting insights, and so you might want to check that out. In Ohio, it's going to be a really big deal because ash is such an important component of the forest in Ohio, and these are some FIA data, but the Ohio Department of Natural Resources estimates that about 10% of the canopy cover in Ohio's forest is ash, and about a third of Ohio is very heavily forested, about two-thirds is urban and agricultural. So we've been interested in what is going to be the impact of this ash. It's fairly uniformly distributed. You don't find ash stands. The ash exists in a very mixed deciduous forest component, and you get scattered gap forming throughout the forest as these trees are killed. An example of a gap in one of our forest sites. Some of our objectives have been to ask whether forest composition affects susceptibility to invasion. Are all forests equally susceptible? What are patterns and rates of ash mortality? How fast are these forests being killed? How fast is ash declining? Successional patterns, effects on understory species and also on exotic plant. Ash regeneration, seedling dynamics, seed bank dynamics. Is ash going to return? Will EAB take it out if it does? And as I said, the spread of invasive plants moving from the forest edges into these gaps as it hopscotches into the forest. The work that we're doing is in the Huron River watershed of southeast Michigan, and this is there's a remarkable amount of forest actually in southeast Michigan. Of course, it's embedded in a highly urbanized matrix, but there's a large number of natural areas, state game areas, state recreation areas with large tracts of forest in this area. And we're working in these sites. We've established 30 stands within